Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to True Crimes Podcast. I have a returning guest from last week, Roberta Glass. And today we're going to continue in discussing the similarities between the Amanda Knox, or the murder of Meredith Kircher case, and the West Memphis Three. Hi, Roberta. How are you doing?
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So I'm glad you could come back and talk some more. I think a lot of people were interested in this topic, so I'm glad we can continue. There's so much more that we can say, right? And we only scratched the surface.
Absolutely.
So, all right, so that's just a quick recap from last week. You know, we discussed a little bit about the documentaries and about how there are three perpetrators in each crime, and a little bit about how they both became celebrities. How about talking about, I think we didn't cover so much last week was how they, one thing is that how they both portray themselves, and I'm talking about the two main people. So in each crime there were three perpetrators, but one perpetrator of the three gets all the attention. And then the murder of Meredith Kircher, it was Amanda Knox. And in the West Memphis Three, it was Damien Echols, whose real name is Michael Hutchinson, right?
Right, that's correct.
So between the two of them, now they're getting most of the publicity and they're getting all the documentaries and the interviews and celebrity endorsements. And they both portray themselves as a martyr, right, as another victim, right?
Right. They both talked extensively about how horrible their prison time was, and quite improbably with Damien Echols, because he said that he was beat up when there's no evidence that he was beat up. He also said that he was raped by the cellmate, and that sort of fell through. And Amanda Knox said it was awful, terrible time. And then you read, I think it's very interesting to read the account of the prison guard with Amanda Knox, who said she was very stoic. She didn't share anything with anybody in prison, any of her food or any of her stuff. She was incredibly selfish. She didn't clean up. And she slept like a baby, didn't need anything to sleep like the other prisoners, and was really sailed through prison, according to the prison guard, unemotionally.
Yes, yes.
And she doesn't, in her book, she said she could barely, you know, stand it, and only the priest got her through or something, you know.
Yes, yes, I remember that. That's an article about, I can't remember the author's name, but it was, there's a really good article online about, I don't know if you remember the title of it. Was it like a,
I think it's from the Daily Mail, but it's quite a good take on how she was. And when she first got convicted the first time, the press in America said that she was distraught and that her cellmates were helping her heal, and they gave her cookies and they were comforting her. And I was like, oh, that's what I would do if I were an innocent person. I would be crying. Because at this point, I didn't know. I didn't have an opinion. I was just looking at the evidence. And I was like, oh,
right,
that's what I would do if I were wrongly convicted. And then you read that she had no emotion, didn't cry at all, and had no reaction to being convicted. So,
right. I read that she never cried. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the word to the U.S., you know, to the U.S. people was that she was distraught and upset, and all her friends
suicidal,
were helping
yeah.
her through it.
Suicidal,
it's a great
all the stuff,
use
yeah.
of PR. It got to me.
Well, you know, and also if you go to the murderofmeredithkircher.com, they have all of the audios, because every time the parents visited, it was audio and videotaped. So you can see firsthand that, you know, she really wasn't that upset. She was all very, you know, giddy and talkative and you know, discussing how they're and giving messages to the police, you know, through their conversations and saying things for their benefit. And it's really quite interesting. It's really quite revealing, I think, when you see the reality of what
right.
went
That's
on.
Right. That's another similarity, is that kind of unemotionalism, the stoic quality they both have. Eccles said that when he was on the stand, he was daydreaming. He could possibly get the electric chair or whatever we have now, you know, what I'm trying to think of. The injection, death penalty. And he's on the stand daydreaming and getting bored during cross-examination. So I think that kind of really unemotional reaction to heightened emotion is interesting in both of them.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think Amenanox's PR tried to spin that in saying, oh, just because I didn't act as people expect a young woman to act, you know, rather than accepting the fact that she appeared cold-hearted and unemotional, which is
she
not.
She looked Diane Sawyer in the eye and said, everybody reacts to tragedy in a different way when
right.
giving an excuse as to why she did cartwheels, splits, and all sorts of gymnastics that she denies that other people saw. You know, she said it was only one stretch or one split. It's inappropriate in the police station. It's behavior that no one else would do in that situation. It's odd. It's very odd behavior. Yeah, that's true. No other non-sociopath would do. Let me correct myself.
Jody did.
I love how they put that as normal behavior. I was just doing some, you know, splits and, you know, while I was waiting to talk about my friend's murder. It's bizarre. And she didn't go to the memorial service either, which everyone else went to. She went and got pizza with her boyfriend, which I think is very telling, too. And that's supposed to just be another anomaly that doesn't mean anything, of course.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they both very unemotional about what they did and in court and after the murder. So, yeah, now another thing I thought was interesting, I guess another comment I was going to make is part of her going back to her documentary a little bit is that is also a repeated theme that she seems to repeat is it could happen to you. There's always this, she tries to tell people, like, what happened to her can happen to you. And I always felt like, no, what happened to you is not what could happen to anyone, but anyone can become a victim of a crime, yes. So I don't know if you, did you get that with Damien Eccles? Yeah.
Right.
Did he do that as well?
Either I'm a wolf in sheep clothing or I'm you. I think she's a wolf in sheep clothing, as I said last week, but she...
Yeah.
That is a very manipulative tactic, and that's why I picked out her feeding her cat in the beginning of the episode, in the beginning of her documentary, as being important because they want the audience to see the world through her eyes. And so that documentary is going to be from her perspective. Our sympathies are going to be with her. And in these cases, the PR people and as well as the person on trial wants the sympathy to be with them. So they're constantly asking people to put themselves in their shoes, not the victim's shoes, in their shoes.
Right, right. Exactly, yeah. I'm trying to make it seem like
and
it could happen.
And you hear that often when
I'm
debating true crime stuff, especially with my best friend. He goes, well, I don't know what I would do if I were accused of a crime I didn't commit. And I think the likelihood of being accused of a crime you didn't commit and actually going to trial and be convicted is exaggerated in our country.
Yeah, purposefully being exaggerated. It seems almost like an agenda. There seems to be something going on where they're trying to attack the judicial system and make it and turn everything around, you know, turn around all these convictions that have happened. Yeah,
so cottage industry.
Now, how about, now I know that Amanda Knox, she also calls herself a best-selling author, but with her memoir, she had two ghostwriters who actually wrote her memoir. Did Damien Eccles also have ghostwriters as well for his books, or did he actually write them?
Okay. I would assume so, but I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, she definitely did. I don't remember their names, but they're written about in the news. okay. All right, another thing that was similar between the two of them is that they both claimed that they didn't have any previous run-ins with the law before this major crime. However, that turns out not to be true, right? Amanda Knox got a citation for an out-of-control party when she was at, right before she left for Perugia. They were, drinking
right.
drugs.
Where they were
throwing rocks. Pretty out of control,
yeah.
And the neighbors
were pretty
in fear.
I don't know no party I've ever been to has ended with people throwing rocks. I don't know about you.
No.
No matter how wild.
Yikes.
No. I guess that's just, we're supposed to put that as normal.
This is the University of Washington. This isn't like on the streets in some bad side of town. This was the University of Washington. I mean, they were talking about how much she did, according to some of her students there, other students. She did a lot of drugs when she was there.
No, and Eccles was known too. You know, was known for his bad behavior, getting into fights, setting fires, killing dogs, cats. And it's interesting that the villain in his case is the juvenile probation officer, Jerry Driver, and in Amanda Knox's case, it's Manini, the prosecutor. Those are the bad guys in the story that they tell. That's the villain.
It's all their fault, yeah.
It's all their fault. It's nothing I did.
Yeah. Yes,
and, you know,
yes.
The thing about both these cases is that, I'm so sorry, am I talking over you?
No.
Is that when you try to put together both of their stories fall apart. The logic of their story falls apart. I was wearing black, so I had a target on my back. Is there any evidence of that? No, there's no evidence that because you wore black, you were a target. In fact, there's a ton of evidence that you were a disturbed person with 500 pages of records of you of how disturbed you are that your own defense team put together of your records when you were in the psychiatric hospital. So, and one of them says in his own handwriting is his application for, benefits. And he says, I'm a sociopath and I'm homicidal in his own handwriting, but blame it all on Jerry Driver. So in these cases, it's just, it falls apart when you look into it. Their defense or their side of the story falls apart.
Yes. Yes. And another interesting thing about Amanda Knox is that she admitted to staging a break-in before Perugia with a roommate that she had at the University of Washington as well. So very similar to the stage break-in at the crime in Perugia. She made it appear as if their apartment had been ransacked and broken into and things stolen to frighten her roommate, to upset her roommate.
That's a great point, Liz. And who does that? That was a prank? Who does that?
That was supposed to be a prank. And she really upset the girl. She always apologized
later.
Stages a break-in
as a prank.
Right. In college, this isn't the, yeah. So.
Very odd.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the trolls?
I just want to jump in. Go ahead. You can talk about the trolls.
Well, both of them have a very scary army of trolls out there. Some paid, some not paid. Some you don't know. Some may have multiple identities. One, I think Trench Reynolds, that writer, got sent a box of shit. So, I mean,
for
writing about Eccles, for not believing their side of the story. William Ramsey has been harassed. Amanda Knox, same thing. They used to have a professional woman who used to tweet for her, tweet out stuff for her. she seems to have retired. But, you know, they just, it's endless. People constantly debating the case online, great, and especially
yes.
on Twitter, but in a particularly nasty way, and going after the Meredith Kircher's family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that went on all throughout the trial. You know, and this is when we went back to last week about the attacks on the victim's family. It's like there's an online, whether they're paid or not paid, you know, but they're nonstop, 24/7, you know, 365 days a year. These people are on there, and they were attacking all throughout the trials. They were attacking the victim's family, blaming them for this, saying, "Oh, they're going after poor Amanda and Raphael," blaming the victim's family. I can't even imagine, you know, if your child, your sibling is murdered, and you're dealing with that, and then you have an army of trolls attacking you online, you know, tweeting out pictures from the crime scene that were, and then publishing them. That's another thing. Raphael Sledgetoe's family on national television in Italy broadcast nude pictures from the crime scene of Meredith Kircher's body. They just put it out there, and it was. They got a lot of backlash for that. So there was a lot of abuse on the victim's family all throughout this by the perpetrators.
And terrible insensitivity, you know, terrible insensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
every time I look at a website, and if it says the Amanda Knox case instead of the Meredith Kircher murder, I know that that's going to be an Amanda Knox PR extravaganza.
Mm-hmm.
website.
Oh, yeah.
Says the Amanda
Usually.
Knox case.
Yeah. Well, most people know by that by now, so I use that. I use that name. I use Amanda Knox when I talk about the crime too. Most people, because everybody's so familiar with her publicity.
Sure.
Everybody's
you know
all.
I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good way. It's a good rule of thumb to identify what's coming from her PR team.
Yeah. Yeah. But she does have an army. And it's hard to say, you know, it's the internet, you know, and a lot of people with a lot of time on their hands that have nothing else to do but try to track people down. I mean, my name is out there with my website and everything, so they've already researched everything they can about me. It's like ridiculous.
I know.
Yeah, right? Ugh, it's ridiculous.
I know. They'll really go after you and everything about you. Because we don't have the right to state our opinion.
Yes, freedom of speech.
They just want one side.
Yes, yes.
They're not
they don't
doing
respect
that,
freedom
no.
of speech. Yeah, because they know they're wrong and they can't argue with that. So instead, they harass you and try to defame you. Yeah.
You brought up a really
yep.
interesting technique that they use, which is asking you really minute details of the case that they already know. Just to
uh-huh.
waste your time and get you
yeah,
to
you,
like.
Can you give me a reference to
I guess
that?
They also want other people
to
think that that's not true. They're not going to read the reply. So you're like,
no,
you know, scrambling to find the information
yeah.
and put it up. I thought that was
yeah.
very interesting. To just keep
yeah.
you busy. Just keep you busy.
Yes.
And I don't engage
now,
with them anymore because I'm not going to convince anybody on Twitter. The thing that will drive me crazy is if people say
yeah.
Jesse Ms. Kelly's one confession. Then you might hear
uh-huh.
from me. But otherwise, I tend not
oh,
to argue with people about cases on Twitter.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, it's just endless. It's been so long. It's, you know. But, yeah. It continues on, though. It does continue on, you know, strongly. And, you know, as long as the case...
I think not
cases,
in Amanda Knox's favor. As it goes on, I think the PR money dries up. You know, she put out a lot of experts to argue her case. And like Jim Clemente, and I'm trying to think of some other people. I'm trying to think of that other guy's name. There's a few of them who came on shows and gave completely wrong information about the case, false information,
mm-hmm.
saying it was all this one, it was all Rudy, one person committing the crime, and Amanda
well,
and Raph had nothing
to, say
to
that.
Do with it.
Yeah, yeah, they still push that lie. Yeah, yeah. And I was going to say something I can't remember now. But yeah,
but someone asked what was the most damning evidence against both of them,
yeah,
and I would say that
evidence?
Both of these cases are about the totality of evidence. Even Manini said that in Amanda Knox's case, there's not one smoking gun, but in Damien Echols' case, the Ms. Kelly confessions.
Mm-hmm.
No West Memphis 3 supporter has ever come up with a great reason why he confessed in such detailed ways over and over and over and over again in so many different, you know, so many different uncoerced environments. And there's also, you know, the fact that he lies about his case so much. I don't know any innocent person that lies about their case. And with Amanda Knox, let's talk about the DNA, the mixed DNA. That's how what we're forced to call it, not mixed blood, mixed DNA. It's
not
DNA that lights up under luminol, but it's not blood.
Yes.
So is it mixed
it's
root
blood,
vegetables?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's blood,
that's
yeah.
An interesting...
It's absolutely blood. they try to claim, the trolls, her trolls try to claim it's not, but it is blood, absolutely.
Why do you think that
yeah.
they try to move it to DNA so it's just like something she touched? Or?
Yeah, they're trying to claim that was already there. But you can't. The bloody footprints are in her size footprints and Raphael's size footprints, and you've got a big bloody footprint in Raphael's size on the bath mat. So it's kind of hard, you know, to take him away out of the scene there. You know, on top of everything else, I mean.
And it's Philomena's room too, and she's so
yes.
interesting. And both of them say there was no evidence. This is a case with no evidence. Can you imagine? That's a
yeah.
short trial. I'm sorry, there's no evidence. Just convict him right away. I guess that's what they want us to believe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of evidence, you know, against
absolutely. Them. Yes, they got that and the falsely accusing her boss. That was a big one that has convinced many
that's
people.
That's often
that,
like Miss Kelly, just forgotten that she
mm-hmm.
falsely accused her boss, and let him sit there for 2 weeks.
Yes. Yes.
Didn't recant. Just let an innocent person sit in jail
well,
knowing
he almost
that
went
she
down
put him
for
there.
It. If he hadn't gotten, I think it was a Swiss professor, hadn't been an alibi for him, if he hadn't had an alibi for that night, he could have gone down for that crime.
Yeah. That's another thing that they just say, that it was just because she was under pressure. But what human person with real feelings for other people does that?
Nope.
That's not a
actually,
normal behavior. That's the behavior of a guilty person.
Yes.
Accusing
yes.
others and not having any feeling that you might have ruined their life or put them in prison forever. Yet they want to be advocates for the falsely imprisoned.
Accused, yeah, exactly.
So,
and nobody says anything. Nobody says anything there about it. And she goes to these innocence conferences. This is what I was going to say earlier. She's been going to innocence conferences all over the country. She just had one in the Midwest. I can't remember if it was Missouri or Kansas. But it was, you know, these conferences, they charge about $150 a ticket. And if you want to meet her, but even if you pay $150, you don't get a chance to meet her. You have to, if you want to meet her, you have to pay for the meet and greet time, which is $5,000 for it to
wow.
meet her. So she's getting 10 to 20,000 to speak as a keynote speaker, and then she's getting 5,000, you know, per person or per group who wants to meet her. So she's really raking the dough with these conferences.
And she hasn't paid her boss back the money she owes him.
Nope.
For falsely accusing him.
Nope, not that I know.
You know,
nope.
Patrick Lumumba.
She's trying to fight it. Her followers are trying to fight it.
Her supporters don't have any reason for that either, why she's not paying him back.
Nope. Not a valid reason, no.
Really? Is there any reason that they say?
They're trying to claim that it's all the police's fault and that she Amanda Knox filed a... with the European Court of Human Rights. She's trying to claim that her human rights are violated. Totally bogus. But it takes
mm-hmm.
years for it to be rejected, though. Once you submit it, it takes a long time for them to go over it and go through it and throw it out. So it's fully anticipated to be thrown out. But she's trying to claim that will... They can't change, you know, verdicts or anything. They can't change final decisions. Even if they did side with her, which I don't think they will.
So it won't affect the money that she owes. It won't change the money that she owes Patrick Lumumba, is what you're saying.
No, she owes him money. She's trying to claim that her human rights are violated, and that's why she doesn't have to pay. Because of the police, she's trying to claim that the police violated her human rights.
Unbelievable. I mean, this stuff is really just unbelievable.
Meanwhile, she makes millions of dollars. She makes millions of dollars, and she can't spare $40,000 for Patrick, right?
And they say crime doesn't pay.
Oh God, you know it does. They prove it.
Yeah, definitely pays in this industry, and they all hang out together. I was just, you know, we were just commenting on that before I went on air. They all seem to like to meet up at these innocence conferences, and the same cast of characters comes in and out from one case to another, you know. Whether it's, you know, Ryan Ferguson or if it's Marty Tankless and Jason Baldwin, they're all sort of like taking pictures with each other. I would think that if I were falsely accused or falsely convicted, it got out. I would not want to be hanging around other people with questionable cases, but who knows? You know?
Yeah, well, they team together. Well, I think that, you know, that's what's so curious about it. You know, why are they teaming up together and being so supportive of each other? Because they do very much support each other and fight for each other, because many of them, you know, are controversial. And as they, you know, as they say on Reddit, it's unresolved cases, and people are of different minds on it. And so they team up together and support each other. And you have to wonder, well, why are they all teamed up together? You know, what's bonding them together? And it seems that they're working with the same people that with all the various projects that they work on, conferences and podcasts and talks that they do. It just seems like the same faces always
involved. Right, Jason Blum and all the same kind of people, the innocent, innocent project.
So it seems
people.
It makes it look like a more of a conglomerate, like a cottage industry.
You know,
as
I
they
come
say.
From a left-wing family, and my brother and gets very upset with me saying, "Well, you know, there are lots of falsely incarcerated people." I mean, don't you think anyone is innocent? And I say, well, I just think the people with a podcast and a documentary are guilty, probably. Most likely.
That's how you can tell.
Meaning, like, if they have the money to get that produced, you know, I'm a little bit more skeptical of their claims.
Well, yeah, because, yeah, they have the same, you know, motivations going on there. And it seems like because these documentaries have proven to be effective in swaying public opinion on their side. So it's becoming sort of a recipe for freeing someone who's guilty and trying to make them appear innocent by making slanted documentaries. And it works so well with the West Memphis 3.
Yeah, and I think Making a Murderer might have been the peak of that, you know, like people just hit like peak innocence fraud with that. It was just so over the top. That guy is so incredibly guilty, Stephen Avery and Dassey, that the prosecutor came out right after and hit really hard in the press and said, this is all a pack of lies, and this is what really happened. And people started to change their opinion. Right away, you could see the tide changing and it becoming less and less of a case of innocence. And I'm curious to see how it plays out, if we're going to have more of these documentaries because they work, or if they're going to scale back a little bit and we're going to have maybe a little bit more balance now, because that seemed to me just so over the top, that guy with all the DNA evidence. I mean, it's just like a slam dunk case, the Avery case, as far as I'm concerned. It's not a false confession type case. So,
right. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Unless they can think of something else, that they probably still continue the documentary way. They're probably scrambling to figure something out.
It's
maybe,
very
maybe,
effective.
You know what? Maybe podcasts are next, because that Serial podcast did really well. Maybe that's the next generation.
It sure did, and it's interesting that Sarah Koenig never wants to do another true crime one again.
Really?
Maybe
why
freeing
was that?
A murderer, or the possibility of freeing a murderer may be too much to stomach for her. Who knows?
She said that?
That's what she says. She said that the next one's not going to be about true crime, and she doesn't know if she's ever going to do one about true crime.
Really? Wow.
Case. I thought that was
the
interesting.
The trolls got to her. Yeah, well, the trolls are difficult to deal with, you know. It's just sort of a thankless thing.
You have to have a tough skin,
thing.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
You really do have to have a tough skin. Any time you put out your opinion, anywhere publicly. You just have to have a tough skin.
Yeah, but especially with this, you have to have tough everything.
Tough everything.
With the
change of name, change of address, security.
I'm telling you, witness protection. God.
Big dogs that bark.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for being on again. I really, really enjoyed talking to you. I think we're out of time. So, yeah. So, hopefully you'll be on again soon in the future. We can talk about other cases. And, again, you can watch Roberta Glass's videos on YouTube, Roberta Glass, one word.
All one word.
One word. Yes. So, thank you very much for being on, and have a good night.
Thanks, Liz.
Yeah, okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, okay.
Oh shit, I better do it before I can choose my goal. Is to hear you confess, who needs to be the bitch, don't repeat, get the threat. Say no words that don't catch you like the knife that you use. Oh shit, I better do it before I can choose my goal.